Coming up this time, the day Cluffy was running late for a church service.
He pulled up in the ambulance area and he said, have you got this paper? I said, yeah. He said, right. He said, can you write this down? And I remember this word for word. He said, this is Brian Clough. I am with God over the road. Come and get me if you need me. And he put the note in front of the windscreen wipers.
There's the story behind one of Brian's greatest signings.
On the Monday morning, came into the office, half past nine. He said, right, Mark, he said, get your coat on. And he said, can you bring some bank transfer forms, registration forms? I said, yeah, where are we going? He said, we're going to London. He said, we're going to sign Dave Mackay.
Marcus, good afternoon to you. It's not a very good afternoon, actually. It's pouring down, but it's nice to see you.
You'll hear a fascinating insight into one of Cluffy's unique motivational team talks.
He was a master at knowing how players individually needed to be treated, but also how to gel them as a group.
Hi, it's Viv Anderson. You're listening to the Green Jumper podcast.
And let's not forget what happened at the church service.
He said, I'm really, really sorry, Vicar. Please accept my apologies. And he pulled out £100 in notes. This is 1968, 69. £100, quite a lot of money in those days.
Yes.
And he said, I'm really, really sorry. Take that, he said, and put it in your swear box.
Hello, Paul Hart here. You're listening to the Green Jumper podcast with Marcus Holt.
Welcome along to part two of my conversation with Malcolm Bramley, who first encountered Cluffy when he was assistant secretary at Sunderland and later joined him as club secretary at Derby. And as part of our chat, I asked Malcolm if he could give any insights into Brian's unique style of motivating his players.
There was one occasion when I was in the dressing room and it was only about 10 minutes before they were due to go out. And I'd gone into the dressing room to deal with some tickets for one of the players or something. And I was just about to go out the door when he said, hang on. He said, don't go out. He said, I'm going to give them a classic pre-match talk.
Mm.
So I thought, this will be interesting. This will be another experience that I'll never forget. And I've never forgotten it to this day because he looked around at the players and he pointed to one of the players. I think it might have been Roy McFarlane. And he said, young man, he said, you're looking very, very smart in your white shirt. And the young man next to you has also got a white shirt on. And he looks very, very smart as well. Now, what I want you to do, all of you, do you notice on this table there's a thing called a football? And do you notice when you go out onto the football pitch, there's some white posts at the end of the ground, at each end? What I want you to do is, with your nice white shirts and your nice clean boots, I want you to pass that football to somebody with a white shirt on. Now, the team you're playing have got red shirts. I don't want you to pass to the red shirts. I want you to pass to the white shirts. And when you get near enough, I want you to try and get that ball inside those white posts. Now, there's only two other things. One is, and this is the most important, enjoy yourselves. I pay you to enjoy yourself. And the other thing is, it's me and Barbara's wedding anniversary. And Barbara wants to go out for a meal tonight. And I want Barbara to be happy. And I won't be happy if you lose this football match. So I'm asking you, please, gentlemen, for me, would you go out and get me 3 points? Now get yourself out there. And don't forget, enjoy yourself.
Oh.
And that was it. That was it. And the players absolutely worshipped him.
Oh.
Even though they feared him at times.
Yeah.
But he knew everything about every player. He knew their wives. He knew their kids' names. He knew their parents' names. He knew all their birthdays. And they just thought the world of him.
Yes.
And I think with any football club that has success, it's not just about the ability of individual players. It's about how they gel as a group.
Yes.
And he was a master at knowing how players individually needed to be treated, but also how to gel them as a group.
Together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. I've interviewed Alan Hinton on the podcast, and he recalled how I think Clough and Taylor would get together and think, how can we make Archie Gemmell really angry? Because he played better when he was wound up. And they would try and wind Archie up. And Archie actually told me on the podcast, you know, he'd come in for some criticism at half time, and which he thought wasn't warranted. And he'd give his two penneth back as well. So there were different ways of motivating different players, weren't there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, to be fair, he was probably the most Jekyll and Hyde type of figure that I've ever known in my whole life. So there were, you had to be on your toes all the time, because you never knew from one, not just from one day to the next, but from one hour to the next, what sort of mood you'd be in. You could walk down the corridor, even, you know, remembering how well I knew him, he walked down the corridor, and one day he would be laughing and joking and having a chat. Next day, he would just walk back and completely ignore you. So you never really knew. But he was a constant with the players. That was the important thing.
Yes, yes. And it kept them on their toes, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
You know, yes.
Oh, yeah.
They never knew quite what to expect next. And
that's right.
With those Derby days, he said one of his best signings was Dave Mackay, which was really against the odds, because I think Mackay at the time was on his way up to Scotland to be a player manager there, to leave Spurs altogether. And Cluffy actually went down to Spurs to see if he could persuade him. And you have some special memories of that.
Yes. Well, I mentioned earlier about this meeting that we used to have on a Sunday morning. And the subject of players came up one morning. And Peter Taylor said, "Do you know what?" He said, "We need somebody with experience in front of the back four." And he said, "I think if we do that," he said, "I reckon we'll get promotion this season." This was in the close season. I think it was in July.
Right.
And he said, "You know what, Brian?" He said, "I think we should sign Dave Mackay." And I always remember Cluffy looking at him. He said, "What, you, Dave Mackay? You must be joking. He's finished. He's nearly 40. And he said, "I've heard he's going to Hearts as assistant manager." So Peter said, "I'm telling you now, we signed Dave Mackay. It doesn't even need to break sweat. He could just spray balls around from in front of the back four, and he'd be a huge influence in the dressing room as well." And Cluffy said, "Absolutely no chance. No chance whatsoever." So that was on the Sunday. On the Monday morning, came into the office about 9:30. And he said, "Right, Mark," he said, "get your coat on." And he said, "Can you bring some blank transfer forms? Registration forms." Mm-hmm. I said, "Yeah, where are we going?" He said, "We're going to London." He said, "We're going to sign Dave Mackay." So we drove down to London from Derby and went into Whitehall. And this is without any phone calls, nothing whatsoever. And he hadn't even mentioned it to the chairman of Derby that he was going, nothing about fees or anything like that. So we walked into the reception area at White Hart Lane. And obviously people recognised Brian Clough by now. And the receptionist said, "Oh, Mr. Clough, what are you doing here?" He said, I would like to speak to Mr. Nicholson, please." And Bill Nicholson being the Tottenham manager. Mm. And she said, "Well, he's in a meeting at the moment." But he said, "Oh, we'll wait. And I think we waited about an hour, going to Bill Nicholson's office. Obviously, Bill Nicholson asked what he was doing there. He said, "I've come to sign David Mackay." And he said, "Are you serious?" He said, "He's finished. I think he's going to Hearts anyway. We were talking about it the other day." So he said, "Would you give me permission to speak to him?" There was no talk about fee or anything else. He said, "Yeah, of course, you can speak to him. You won't get anywhere. Where is he? Well, there's nobody in the ground now. Training's finished. So we were given his address, which was down in Essex somewhere. We drive down in Essex, knock on the door, and Dave McKay answers the door. What the F are you doing here? Good afternoon, David. He said, I've come to sign you for Derby County. And the usual, again, what are you talking about? I'm finished. I'm going to Hearts. No, you're not. You're coming to Derby County. And he said, anyway, can we have a cup of tea? So we go in. And I think this was must have been about 5 o'clock by this time. And 11 o'clock at night, it worn him down. Completely worn him down, and he agreed to sign. So I'd got the registration form there and everything and the contract, and he said, right, I will sign. What about terms? David, do you want to play for me or not? He said, well, I've just told you I'm going to sign. He said, right. He said, well, if you're going to play for me, I'm going to trust you implicitly, but you have to trust me implicitly. He said, just sign the contract. He said, come up to Derby tomorrow and we'll have a chat. And we might have a chat about money then. And Dave McKay actually signed a blank contract.
Wow.
And they sorted out terms the following day. And Peter Taylor was proved absolutely right. He made that team. He got, I think he got PFA Player of the Year.
Yes.
That year, which was unheard of for a second division player, and a huge influence both on and off the field, and a lovely man. And we, I was living in the Midland Hotel at the time before I'd bought a house. And he lived in the Midland Hotel at the same time. And quite often we used to have dinner at night. And then, of course, there was no televisions or anything in the bedrooms. And they'd got a lounge in the Midland Hotel. And we used to sit in the lounge and watch Coronation Street. I think it was on a couple of times a week then.
Yes. Oh, amazing. Amazing.
Great man.
And of course, I think it was Dave McKay who used to teach Nigel how to hit a ball in the old shooting box at the baseball ground.
That's right.
In the old days. Yeah, marvellous.
There was a wooden box just with holes in it, various heights. And the kids used to be there an awful lot of the time, you know, after school and that sort of thing.
Yes.
So, that's true.
And there was a big sort of family feel, I think, a close-knit feel at the club. And that included the coach and trainer, Jimmy Gordon, as well. Do you remember him?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Jimmy was a great character, I think you always needed a football club. Even now, you need somebody who's between the manager or the head coach and the players. Somebody that's got a great sense of humour, somebody to bounce off, somebody to put their arm around them when they're not feeling very well, don't think they're playing very well. And Jimmy was that person. And the players had an awful lot of time for him. And I think Brian would always say that the two people who were the greatest influence for any of his successes were Peter Taylor, when he worked with Peter Taylor, and also with Jimmy Gordon, a huge influence on Brian, and great mutual respect, really.
Yes, you have some wonderful memories of Brian. It's clear, and it's wonderful to hear. And there's another one I'd like you to tell, because your father, I think, was a Methodist minister. And you have an amusing memory of Brian actually being invited to a church.
Yes, well, as you say, my dad was a Methodist minister, and when I moved to Derby, remembering that I was still only 21, my dad got in touch with a minister called John Tudor, who was the minister of the big Methodist church in the centre of Derby. And John was a big football fan, so every so often I used to invite him to a match and would sit with him in the director's box. And one day he said, do you reckon we could organise a sportsman service for one Sunday night? So I said, yeah, I don't think that'd be a problem. So we talked about it. And eventually we organised this service. And there were some of the players, the directors, cricketers, rugby players, et cetera, were going to be at this service on a Sunday night. I was due to read one of the lessons, and Brian had said that he would come along. So the day arrived, and he was due to pick me up about 6:15, and 6:15 came and went, and the service due to start at 6:30. So I rang him up, and I said, where are you? He said, why? He said, I'm just with the kids. I said, the sportsman service. Completely forgot. He said, I'll be down in a minute. So he picked me up, we tore into Derby, and the church was opposite the main Derby hospital.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And we tore into, there was no parking in the streets. We couldn't find a parking place. So we tore into the hospital, and he pulled up in the ambulance area. And he said, have you got a piece of paper? I said, yeah. He said, right. He said, can you write this down? And I remember this word for word. He said, this is Brian Clough. I am with God over the road. Come and get me if you need me. And he put the note in front of the windscreen wipers. And we went off and we dashed into the church and upstairs. They'd already gone up, the few people who were going to be in the pulpit. They'd already gone up. We were that tight for time. Dashed in there. And John Tudor proceeded to give this wonderful sermon, which was actually based on one of the matches we'd been at. And Brian, in those days, the managers used to sit in the director's box the first half, and then they'd go down the touchline the second half. And the linesman had made an awful decision, and he'd shouted out, what's the use of having a bloody flag if you don't wave it?
Yes.
And John had said to me that I've got my sermon. I've got my sermon sorted. So he gave this great sermon, which was about what's the use of having a flag if you don't wave it? What's the use of having a church if you don't attend it, etc., etc. So at the end of it, the end of the sermon, Brian leant over and he didn't realise he was on the mic. And he said, Vicar, he said, that was effing magnificent. And you heard the gasp. Churches in those days packed on a Sunday night. So there must have been 800 people in there.
Oh.
And the shock of hearing this word. And he realized straight away what he'd said. And he whispered to me, he said, I've made a right mess up there, haven't I? So at the end of the service, we went downstairs into the a little waiting area. And he said, I'm really, really sorry, Vicar. Please accept my apologies. And he pulled out £100 in notes. This is 1968, 69. £100, quite a lot of money in those days.
Yes.
And he said, I'm really, really sorry. Take that, he said, and put it in your swear box. And so that was a service that I'm sure many of the people who are there will, if they're still alive, will never have forgotten.
Exactly. That was a complete one-off church service. Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely brilliant. Now, you left Derby before the controversy of Clough and Taylor resigning. With the falling out that Brian had and disagreements with Sam Longson that led to the resignations, did you sense that on the cards at all behind the scenes at Derby?
No, not at all.
No.
Not at all. I think that was partly because during the time I was there, it was really only the start of Brian's media career,
yes.
If you like.
Yes.
When he was still involved with football. There wasn't the option really for Sam Longson in particular to get upset with Brian about the fact that he was missing from training a lot, which he was subsequently. So no, it was a later period.
Yes.
And I think it was the media and Sam liked the attention.
Yes.
As a chairman, and it was increasingly in those days, Brian was more and more on television, on chat shows and everything else.
Yes.
And I don't think Sam could cope with this, that basically Brian was in, he was having to finally acknowledge what everybody knew, that Brian was in charge of the club and not him. And I think that gradually started the, unfortunately, the fallout.
Yes, yes. Now, a little while after you had left Derby County, I think Brian did surprise you with a special gift. You were obviously in his thoughts.
Yes, I'd gone back up to Sunderland, and it was before I joined Gillingham with Len Ashurst, who was the manager at Gillingham, and there was a knock on the door, and a postman there with a big parcel, and it turned out that it was a full Crown Derby dinner service, coffee service, tea service, and there was a card there, and at the time I left, we were top of the old First Division.
Right.
And he'd cut out a league table from one of the Sunday papers, and the inscription was, nice to think we were both a part of this. Take care, Brian. And I've still got, apart from maybe a couple that have broken, I've still got all those dinner and tea services now.
Ah, fantastic gift, and a big, yeah, big surprise for you,
as
well. Yeah. Well, Malcolm, I could talk to you all day. I really could. And it's with thanks to the Roker Report and Away the Podcast for putting me in touch with you. And I'm glad you still have that special gift from Brian all these years later. Malcolm, thanks so much for sharing your Brian Clough memories. It's been wonderful talking to you.
It's been a pleasure. Take care.
And of course, thanks to you for taking the time to listen. And if you've enjoyed The Green Jumper, please leave a 5-star review and visit the Tribute website, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary. In fact, Brian's son Simon has sent a lovely message of congratulations to mark the milestone, and you can read it on brianclough.com. And that's where you can buy signed copies of my Cloughy books, helping to raise money for good causes. The website has lots more stories and the comprehensive list of the classic Clough quotes, plus the full back catalogue of the podcast. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you can join me next time for more memories of the great man in the green jumper.